Well, hey there. Welcome to another episode of Film Streak. My name is Rob, and every episode here on Film Streak, what I like to do is talk about some new movies that I've seen. And I've certainly seen a lot of movies. I've actually been doing some housekeeping on that, trying to get my numbers straightened out a little bit. And one of those things was I went back to Letterboxd. It's a website that I remember from a while back. That started out as what I remember. It was like one of those things where you do like a check-in for films that you've watched. And I guess it's become like a whole community out there. I hadn't logged into my account in almost 10 years now. I think September of 2013. That was the last time I showed that I put anything up there or even logged in, from what I could tell. So I went back there and logged in, and I had a couple people over the last month or so since the film festival episodes. I had some people mention like, you know, you should be using that or posting to that or whatever. I don't know. I'll see. When I get into a site like that, it kind of reminds me of like, look at all these film nerds. And yet here I am. I'm one of them, right? So I kind of like it a little bit better at the moment, just kind of doing my own thing. But, you know, I want to be able to have people listen to this. So I'll go ahead and post some stuff up there. I at least went and updated all my ratings from the last 10 years. You can bring that over from IMDb, which is what I use to keep track of that kind of stuff. And then took it over to Letterboxd, updated all that. It's like 2,000 films or whatever that I've added. And also added a list of all the films I've talked about here on Film Streak. Now, that's not every single film because not all of the films are available or in the database at Letterboxd. So if you want the full list with all the really hard to find, really obscure things, it's still going to be at IMDb. So if you go to filmstreak.com, you can subscribe there. You can find a link to every film that's talked about in every episode here. Maybe that's something you might find handy. You can go there and add those to your watch list or give them a review or a rating or whatever you want to do. But that just makes it a little easier to go find those films. And the main thing is you can see if they're available to watch somewhere. So IMDb does a pretty cool thing where it'll show you if it's on Netflix or HBO Max or Amazon Prime, obviously, or Hulu or whatever. That's always pretty handy. That's what I use it for. I'm not so much going to IMDb to look at other reviews or what other people rate the films. I'm just looking for the info, right? So with this episode, look, I want to pick up some more Korean films that I really got into with the last episode. And look, what'd I tell you? I just straight murderized those names. Well, I'm trying. I'm brushing up on my Korean, you know? I'm sure I just really screwed those up. But I want to be respectful and give credit to whoever I can, whoever's name I recognize or can pronounce somewhat correctly, I hope. So that's the idea there. If I got all those names wrong, I just sound like a total idiot. I guess let me know. Tell me how to pronounce them correctly. How about that? So, like, in the meantime, let's get into the episode here. Okay, first up, Film Streak 239, Through Korean Cinema. Now, there's no trailer for this. There's really not much on this, but I'll just say this is a documentary from 2010, and it's a little bit strange. It's about an hour long, and you know, I wasn't even sure if I should really count it, but I did want to include it because ultimately this did give me some insight into modern Korean cinema and the history of it and the evolution of it in the last, let's see, like 50 years, basically. And, you know, it's something that I mentioned in the previous episode is like, I just found this a total blind spot for me is not really understanding the change in Korean film as an art form. But also, I didn't really have a good understanding of Korean history, just culturally. And so this film, it gives some context for that. And in a way, it starts out with not so much the films, but it starts out with kind of the culture and the scene in Korea that really, coming out of World War II, was not a place to have this kind of expression, to have media like film or any kind of art. It just wasn't a culture for that. You know, the film does start off here, kind of giving us the picture of what maybe life would have been like in late 40s, 50s Korea, coming out of World War II, coming out of Japanese occupation. You know, it's mentioned here that any film that might have been created before 1945 was either propaganda for Japanese interests, or it was just vanished. It's just erased from existence. So that's important to know, that history of film in Korea doesn't extend as far as American film or even European films. It doesn't go back 100+ years. That at least gives me a fundamental understanding. Like, it's not that people in Korea couldn't see films, but they weren't making films. They weren't using it as a form of expression or creativity. Well, until what seems like, from this documentary at least, well until the 70s and 80s, when things started to change. There were some filmmakers that were able to do some things to depict or portray Korean history and culture and some of maybe the more traditional types of stories. And yet it still was a thing where it never really broke out of Korea. So it was largely a localized or regionalized art form. The types of stories that were being told, the types of settings and all of that. So when things changed in the government in Korea, some of the laws changed regarding filmmakers or content in the 80s, I think it was 1986 specifically, they mentioned that some laws changed. It opened up some new opportunities. Production companies were no longer kind of overseen or funded by the state. So now anybody could go open a film production house and start making stuff, start creating stuff. It's there in the late 80s, as is explained, that a Korean new wave begins. When you see the actual change in government, that goes from a military-backed government to just an open democratic society now in the 90s, that's where new stories come out. You know, the focus up until that point had either been on the historical elements or cultural elements from the past, then going into more social commentary, more critique of the government, even though it was very careful and very delicate. But filmmakers were trying to find ways to comment on the troubles of the time in the 80s and into the 90s. And once the whole regime changes in Korea, now we're off to the races. And you see less socially aware films and more films that are maybe more in line with American or European types of stories, personal stories or crime dramas or comedies. You know, they really start to expand and flower out now. So there's several films that are mentioned in this documentary, and there are a handful of filmmakers, directors that were interviewed and some of their thoughts on the making of their film and why they made them. One that I wrote down here was Nowhere to Hide, which from what this documentary explains, at least, is really the first kind of international breakout success. The first thing that really got some notice outside of Korea in 1999. And so that's where I feel like, okay, things are changing in terms of not only are the types of stories that are being told more universal, they're kind of reaching across language barriers and cultural barriers, but also the production quality, the craftsmanship is really taking a leap forward because it's able to compete or at least seem on par with a lot of other stuff going on in the world. So there are some other films that are mentioned. Most of them didn't really seem like the type of film that I'm really looking for right now. So I didn't write a lot of them down. I did write down Nowhere to Hide. There's another one, Peppermint Candy, which despite the title, sounds pretty intense. They describe some of the idea of the film is that it's almost a recap or a reenactment of some events or some cultural moments in that period from 1980 to 1999 in Korea, and all the turmoil, all of the political and social changes that were happening. The last filmmaker that is brought up here and some of his films are shown, that's Park Chan-wook, who, from what I can see, not only haven't seen some of the films now, but just in context with these other filmmakers and the other types of films, here is a voice, a force that really redefined the work that was coming out of Korea. Single-handedly, almost, I feel like. Now, like I said, I'm new to a lot of this, so there's probably other filmmakers that were a part of really pushing things forward. But it seems like Park Chan-wook really took his ideas, but also mixed that with some really inventive and sometimes disturbing filmmaking and just totally captured attention from the rest of the world now. This was at least somewhat informative. You know, it's a film from 2010, and it's obviously a pretty small production. You can tell it's not a lot really involved with it, but this one at least gives me some context. It gives me a little bit of idea of who's who and the types of work that they were doing and what the relevance was and how essential it was to kind of get this whole thing of Korean film off the ground and really get it out of the 19th century. I guess I would recommend this. I don't know if you can really find it in too many places. I found it on, I saw it on Plex, which is the, you know, if you have a Plex server that you run to watch your films at home, or they even have a free to stream service. So I found it there. It's also available on Tubi. I think that's where it was. So either way you can watch it, it's going to have some ads in it probably because it's one of those services, but still, if you're interested in this, if you just don't really have a good understanding of Korean cinema, this might be a place to start. Maybe I should have done this before the last episode, but I ended up finding this afterwards. So, hey, that's what happens. Next up, Film Streak 240, Memories of Murder.
Come on.
Okay. Look at this. This is a film from 2003. It's directed by Bong Joon-ho. And, you know, I said in a previous episode, I was talking about some of those films, and I found myself really confused in a way about the sort of mixture of tones, and some of these stories, they feel very serious and dramatic and intense, and yet there's like little hints and moments of comedy, and just, you know, I really had a little problem with that. Like, I just couldn't figure out what the goal was, what the idea was there. You know, I thought at the time, I said, well, maybe I'm just not understanding something. Maybe it's just a sensibility thing that I'm not used to or something. And I'll say this, Memories of Murder, this film, it's got the same kind of dynamic in terms of some of the storytelling, some of the scenes, some of the characters. But here, it's just perfect. It just works. There are moments where this really gets into really intense action or wry, dark humor. And I didn't bat an eye at it. I mean, it made sense. Everything just really fit so perfectly in this film. It wasn't too much in one way or the other. It still kind of held true to what it was trying to do. And so that's where I think, oh, okay, I get it now. You cracked the code for me. Good job. Because I really didn't understand what this was in some of the other films. And now I'm starting to see maybe this is just a part of this type of storytelling from Korea. I mean, I'm sure there are other films, other parts of the world that do a similar thing. Here, though, this is a film that starts out quietly, and it starts with a murder in 1986, and these detectives that are on the case, they seem like they are in charge, and yet they don't quite seem up to the task. Like, they've never had to deal with a crime like this before, where we find a young woman murdered, and then we find a second young woman not long after that. And so now it becomes a case of this is a serial thing that's happening. And we have these two detectives that really are in over their head, even though they are fully convinced and confident that they can figure it out and they know who did it. And we've got Detective Park, who is played by Song Kang-ho. And he's maybe familiar to some people from Parasite, from some of Bong Joon-ho's other films. But here he's someone that is a detective who's pretty confident in himself, but maybe not necessarily good at the job. And when he is investigating this case, trying to figure out who did this and why, he quickly lands on suspects. He just wants to get the arrest. He wants to get the conviction and be able to say he did it. But we've got another detective who comes in, I think it's from Seoul, somewhere like a more higher profile, is Detective Sale, who I feel like is much smarter, maybe follows procedure a little more and follows the evidence, and yet isn't familiar with this area, this part of the country. So he's kind of having to tag along and fight his way for a voice, fight his way to be heard. So you've got these two detectives that seem to be kind of the main conflict of the story. And yet we're reminded in very intricate ways and very cleverly crafted ways that no, there is actually still a killer on the loose. And it feels like it's going to end up in a very typical manner where you've got a detective or detectives trying to find a killer, and they're closing in on him. They're looking at evidence. They're piecing all the clues together. And it feels like there's going to be this big showdown, and we're going to get our killer. We're going to get our guy. We're going to get justice. And so much of this film, I think, relies on that formula that it doesn't focus too much on when it's going to happen. It's just you expect that's coming. Instead, what I feel like this film does, it takes its time and really lets us sit with the characters and sit with their point of view on this. And we get to see these different approaches to trying to solve this crime and how, in some ways, it's not being helpful at all. And in other ways, it's actually working against the whole thing of trying to save someone's life. And even in that regard, I mean, there are some very dark and creepy moments when we're seeing either the killer find his victims or how the killer, like how they're maybe one or two steps behind him. I think the great thing with this film is that it takes its time. It looks like a film that is not in a, it's not in a rush to prove itself. This is very confidently made. I don't know. I don't know how else to put this. And especially in relation to some of these other films that we've talked about here so far. You know, this film looks like, so this was shot and produced in 2003. Takes place in 1986. And somehow it looks like that. Like just the visual style of it, the color palette, the way it's composed and lit, everything looks like this is a film that was made maybe in the late 70s or early 80s. It doesn't feel flashy. It doesn't feel overly done. That's a real strength of this film that these some of these others I've talked about don't really have going for them. You know, they're really caught up a little more in style, you know, trying to show us some stuff we haven't seen before. And this film doesn't do that. This film really kind of keeps it restrained and holds back until the moments when it's really necessary. And then it gives it to you, lets you have the real jolt of electricity moments. You know, I could say, well, this film is, it's just about two cops trying to solve a crime and them going astray, following the wrong evidence or not catching their guy or whatever. But there is even an interesting thematic element, like a subtext that I wasn't prepared for. You know, I didn't think a film like this would go to this level, but you know, there are some moments in the film where these two detectives are kind of arguing with each other of how to do this right and what's the best approach and what's the philosophy behind it. And Detective Sayo here, who is kind of the new kid in town, he comes in with a very clear-cut way of doing stuff that, you know, his mantra for the first two-thirds of the film is, you know, hey, the documents don't lie. Follow the evidence. You know, look at what's in front of you. Don't just imagine and speculate who is doing what or why they're doing it, right? Follow the evidence. And by the end of the film, he's convinced that things went a certain way and this is how the case is going to go. And when it's some test results that come back that he is very confident are going to prove him right, when those come out to not work in his favor, now he realizes that he was going on his own convictions versus the evidence. And it's a real interesting way to flip a character and see them get caught up in their own logic. And of course, the effect that it has on the story at large is that the killer doesn't get caught. And so then how do we continue? What's the conclusion here? You know, and that's one of the other masterstrokes of this film is that it doesn't give us a complete, clean conclusion. We don't know how things ended up. We don't know if the killer was ever caught. And that's both terrifying and tragic. And so to me, don't get me wrong. This is a very kind of dark and grim film, but it is very well done. It's very well acted. And for me, it certainly, like I said, it really kind of opened or it lined some things up now. So I kind of see, I get a little better the sensibility here of what this line that these films are walking, what that really is. Kind of recalibrated me a little bit, you know? So this is really a good one. This is a real recommendation. Watch this one where you can. I saw it on Hulu. It might be available in some other places. Of course, you could probably rent it at this point. I think even Criterion has an edition of it. So that's, hey, I guess that speaks to what this film really means. So check that one out for sure. All right, let's get to next one up. Film Streak 241, I Saw the Devil. Okay, look, if you just saw that trailer, and I know you just heard it, but if you go look up the trailer and watch it, if you've never seen this film, man, that trailer is intense, and this film is no slouch. So, all right, I remember when this film came out. This was 2010, and I remember seeing either a trailer for this or something about this, and it made me think, honestly, like, this film must be so disturbing. I'm guessing there must be, even just going by the title, I don't know. I somehow got wires crossed. I figured, well, there must be some kind of supernatural element to this where it's not just a killer on the loose or whatever. There's something else. There's some other kind of evil in this film. So I really thought it was actually more of a horror film. And now that I'm finally getting to sit down and watch it, I can tell you, I mean, it's not a horror film, even though there are some absolutely horrific things going on in this film. But it is very intense, and it is very suspenseful. And it's one of those that, I don't know how many times I could just say it. Just, that's my review, okay? Oh, look, this is a film about an agent. I can't remember. It's really clear who he works for, like, not CIA, but whatever in Korea. You know, we start the film where he's talking to his wife. She's stuck on the side of the road. It's got a flat tire, waiting for a tow truck, and another car pulls up. As they're on the phone, guy walks up to the door, says, "Hey, can I help you? I'll give you a ride," whatever. It's played very, flatly. Like, you're not really clear on if this is okay, if this is not okay. There is a moment where it does turn, where we see this guy knocking on the window. He kind of lingers a little too much, and he maybe says a couple of the wrong things. And now we get the sense like, oh yeah, this is all going to go bad now. This is in the first 5 minutes of the film. And from then on, so not only do we know who our bad guy is and who our good guy is, because our good guy is on the other end of the phone listening to his wife get attacked and murdered by this guy standing outside the window. So we know who our good guy is. We know who our bad guy is. And now the rest of this film, it's not about figuring that out anymore. It is about the good guy finding the bad guy. But once he does, which doesn't take that long, actually, it's then about him exacting a particular type of revenge on this guy. And it doesn't mean I'm just going to find him and kill him. It's like, I'm going to find him. I'm going to make him hurt. And then I'm going to let him go. And I'm going to keep track of him. I'm going to find him again. And I'm going to make him hurt some more. And it's this real cat and mouse thing that develops. And it is the most intense cat and mouse you might ever see. Because it's not like I'm going to find him and slap him around or something and kind of, you know, kick him in the nuts. No. This goes way beyond that. And at the same time, this killer who is still looking for victims, he finds out what's going on. He figures out, oh, this guy is following me and he's trying to play with me. So now I got to play back. And that's where the game really goes to the next level. I mean, this film, man, I just keep saying, because it's either so unpredictable of what might happen next, like where this story is going and who's going to get what over on the other guy. But then also when things actually get into motion, it is so brutal and so violent and honestly, very graphic. There are things that I saw in this film I've never seen in other films. It goes both ways. I mean, it's the killer when he finds a victim. Some really heavy stuff, man. But then even when this guy, he catches up to him. And I should say the actors here, because the actors are really important, I think, because they really bring their A game. So the killer here is Choi Min-sik, who you recognize from Old Boy. I talked about him in Nameless Gangster. He's the killer. And we find out who he is right away. First scene of the film, we see his face. We know who he is. The good guy here, let's say, the agent who's trying to track this guy down and really work some revenge out on him is Lee Byung-hun, who plays Soo-hyun. And he is, in one way, he comes off looking like the bad guy, like just his presence, right? He's very still and very calm. And yet, at the same time, it's because he is so focused. He is so committed to this. And so it's a really interesting dynamic between these two characters, because the killer here, Jang, who is just kind of ratty looking and dirty and very such a loose cannon, very unpredictable. And I'll just say, I mean, the end of this film, man, I didn't see the end of this film coming. And if you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you to see this for sure. Of course, note that it is pretty violent. But the main thing being that it has the final, let's say the final act of it, or not even the final act, like the final scene, the climax of the film, really, where this detective or this agent really gets his revenge. It kind of seems like he lost out in a way. Like the killer really ended up winning in the end. It almost reminds me of, if you've ever seen Seven, directed by David Fincher, you know, that film is about a killer who's doing all these things and he's trying to make a point with everything. And by the very end of the film, his final victim, his final murder, it's proving everything. It's like his whole thesis throughout the film is like, this is why I did this. And it turns out even if the cops kill him, he still wins, right? Well, it kind of feels like that's where we get to at the end of this film. It builds to this moment where we're not sure Who exactly is on top here? I mean, because our good guy here has become a monster to be able to stop this monster. And this whole game of one-upsmanship of who's going to be the biggest monster, when it finally catches up with both of them, I mean, the very last scene of this film, it is like the coldest revenge ever. That's it. I don't even know how else to say it. It is the coldest revenge I've ever seen. And without really describing it and going into it, because it's a lot to do with some of the plot points. I mean, if you make it to the end of this film, you will just be like, whoa. This is a recommendation for sure. This is I Saw the Devil from 2010. I saw that on Amazon Prime Video. I'm sure it's probably available in other places. So all around, really well done. It's definitely a recommendation. Check that one out. All right, let's get to our next one here. Film Streak 242, The Wailing.
귀신 들었대요.
So I'm going to say this, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I just talked about a film called I Saw the Devil, right? This film, The Wailing, I think this should have been the title for this film, because this is definitely in line with that. So let me just, let me go into this really quickly here. This is from writer and director Na Hong Jin and stars maybe a couple of faces I recognize. There's Kwak Do-won and Hwang Jun-min, who were in, was it New World? And what was it? It was one of the other films I saw in the last episode. I recognize them right away. And I feel like that's part of the barrier here with some of these films is I'm trying to really relate to like who's in films and the kinds of characters that they're playing. And maybe that's sometimes a positive, maybe it's a negative sometimes, but I'm at least trying to have a better understanding, like kind of get to know who's who, right? And so seeing these characters in this film, or seeing these actors in this film, playing very different characters than the other films, that at least showed me, all right, I like this now. I'm seeing the variety, I'm seeing how everybody's mixing it up. Look, this film is about a small village in the Korean countryside. There's a mysterious death. There's a murder that goes with that. And then there's the local police, small town police that are trying to figure this out. And yet at the same time, like these aren't just normal murders. There's clearly something else going on. It's not quite explained at the beginning because I think even the characters don't know, but it seems like maybe this is some kind of infection, some kind of mania. It's not really defined. And Here's where I start to realize, oh, no, this film is going to a new place now. This is not just about some cops trying to figure out who's killing people, serial killer, murder mystery kind of thing. No. This is going to, we're dealing with some otherworld shit now. And I thought for a moment, I thought, oh, are we getting, is this going into like zombies? And is that where this is taking us? No, it's not that. I thought maybe it's like ghosts. Maybe we're seeing like spirits or something. It's not that really. It is interesting where this film goes though. And the way it gets there, it kind of takes us the long way around a little bit. It gets a little bit complicated in terms of who's doing what and why. Man, the journey that this thing takes, this kind of descent into madness and into hell for these characters, wow, it's pretty jarring. And even to the point where we see, at some point, we see a character that is essentially the interloper, the outsider to this community, and he is being kind of run off or chased down. And when we believe he is the one that's doing all this, he's perpetrating these killings and this madness, when he gets allegedly, supposedly, from what we can see, and he gets killed, well, we think, okay, well, I guess, is that the end of the story? No, it's definitely not. And so that's where I don't really want to give anything away. I feel like you got to see this and really just kind of go on the journey. But I'll just say that this film is very different than what I thought. And in a good way, though. It really surprised me. And the depths and the vision, the very disturbing vision of evil that this film portrays or tries to give us. Wow. It's pretty great. I know I kind of talked around it a lot. I don't know. Part of this film, I think, more than maybe the others even, is piecing it together as you go. Because I think the point of view that this film tells the story from is from a character who's not really up on it. You know, he's not with it. He's a cop, but he's kind of half a cop. You know, he's not very forceful. He's not very thoughtful. He just does it. I guess it's just his job. And there is a point where the stakes get really raised in terms of, oh, I just have to figure out maybe somebody's killing somebody. When it involves his family, then things really turn and this guy has to start doing the work. And I think going through that, watching the characters kind of get their shit together to figure this out. And then they really have to end up dealing with some pretty horrific business. That's part of the fun of this, I think. That was the interesting discovery for me in this film. So I don't want to give too much away other than this film really does give me a vision or a picture of evil that I hadn't really seen before. And even up until the almost twist end, and I say twist, not twist on the story, but like a twist of the knife. It's like it gets you and then it twists it around for you. Really kind of work it in there. Like, yeah, you thought. So anyway, that's a recommendation from me. That's The Wailing. I don't want to say too much about it. It is kind of a longer film, so it is much more of a ride to go on. But if you're into horror, if you're into supernatural kind of, even crime dramas, which is where I thought this was, this might still work for you. So check that one out. I think I saw that on Peacock. Give that one a watch. All right, let's get to our next one here. This is our last one for this episode and probably going to be the last one for a little bit. I do want to get to some other films I've got on the list. So let's get to Film Streak 243, The Villainess.
Is there a song at Tangshin and Opso? Hasman would in Tangshin and Tessalis,
우리 식구가 되어준다면.
퇴소 후 10년, 10년간 우리와 함께 한다면 남은 평생을 보내.
누굽니까?
위에서 명령하면 난 전달하고 넌 죽인다.
All right. So, look, this is a film from 2017, and this was, I remember when this came out, too, and I remember thinking, just, I think I might have seen a trailer for it or a clip of it, and I thought, oh, wow, this action looks really great. This is going to be a real standout. And not really knowing what the story was or anything, it's just the style of it just really seemed kind of up my alley of, you know, this is the kind of thing I'd probably be into. And having finally watched the film now, I mean, this is, what, 5-6 years later? And that's the other thing. This film really does follow a template of films and stories that we've seen before, whether it's something like John Wick or something like La Femme Nikita or any of the variations of those stories where we've got basically an assassin, a hitman, a contract killer who is trying to get out of that life. I even talked about this in last episode, a company man. This is at least a little bit different variation on that, but it's still kind of the same thing. The real showcase here is in some of the action. And I say some of the action because by my count, I think three really great, really inventive and totally dangerous looking action scenes in this film that I watched them and I don't know how they did some of that stuff. And I don't know how someone didn't get hurt or get killed or all of the above. And so when those moments happen in the film, oh man, this thing is really, it's really hidden. I mean, you really go for a ride with it. But there are other moments in the film, other action sequences where, oh, we're doing the fast cut, shaky cam, not really clear on whose arm that is or whose leg that is. We're doing that style now? Like in the same film. You know, the opening scene, the opening, like, I don't know, what, 5-10 minutes of this film is our main character here, Suki, she's trying to get out of this facility and she's fighting her way through, shooting her way through, you know, wrestling and punching and kicking and jumping her way through all these rooms of bad guys. And we're seeing it from her point of view. So it's like a first person video game style almost. And it's really intense. And it's really, I mean, you can see if you look for them, you can see where there are like some of the cuts or the seams or whatever, but it's mostly pulled off pretty well in terms of it's just, you're just in the moment. This is happening, then turn, that's happening, then turn, that's happening. And then, you know, you keep going. And you think about how much time and choreography and work and how much had to go into making all of that work out. And yet the film, when it gets lazy later in some of the other parts, you just kind of think, oh, well, that, you know, why didn't they do that for every fight scene or every action scene? Give us a real intense new way of experiencing this. And so that's where I think the film has some strengths, but also has some weaknesses because it can't really be consistent. And in terms of the premise itself, you know, I'll just say it's about a killer. She's trying to lead a normal life. She does her service of 10 years for this agency or whatever. And now she's out. She can have a husband and a child and live a normal life out in the world. But of course, that never really works out, right? Like, trouble is always going to follow you somehow. And part of that trouble is she figures out who killed her father figure person in her life when she was young. And so now she goes to get revenge on them. And, you know, it's just a way to get this character in motion, right? The plot is kind of super thin here. It's not really all that relevant even. It's really more about the style and the action of it. And like I said, I just wish the action was more consistent, because I think that's really the big letdown of the film here, is it doesn't really stay the course when we get to the end. And when we're relying on the action to really propel this thing and move us through it, and it's not always there, then we're falling back on this plot, which is already kind of paper thin to begin with. So, you know, I'll just say it's maybe one of those things, it's a curiosity. Just watch some of the clips of it maybe, and you might get the same effect. Otherwise, it's probably just going to be a pass, just because I feel like some of these other films I've talked about now, these are much better films. This one's got some interesting moments and it's got some interesting filmmaking in it, but it's not quite on that level. So, you know, that's my thoughts on it. That's The Villainess. Wow. I've had fun looking at these films and really exploring this world of Korean cinema and action and drama and even some of the more intense stuff. I think it's been fun. I'm going to keep doing some more of this in the future. I want to go into like different lanes that I've never really thought of before and never even considered. So I'll just say, if you've seen any of these films, if you have some thoughts, maybe you have a better take on it. Maybe you saw some things I didn't understand. So let me know. Just send a comment to comments@filmstreak.com. If you go to filmstreak.com directly, you can see this episode, the other episodes. You can leave a comment there. You can also subscribe. You know, you can catch this in iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called these days, Spotify, all of those. You can even sign up to get them directly to email. So that way, hey, you don't got to go find it. It comes right to you, which make it easy. And that's all I'm going to send you. I don't send you any other emails. So in the meantime, hey, thanks for checking us out. Thanks for listening. And let's go watch some new movies.